podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. So excited you decided to join us today. Before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to give a big shout out to our two sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dibbs, the number one shooting machine on the market. You know, their customer service, even before they were sponsors, was unbelievable. It's one of the reasons I reached out to them and said, I want you to be one of our sponsors on our podcast, because I just believe in their machine so much, and it's just helped our team win so many games. So mention Coach Unplugged, they'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. It is the one-stop shop. It is my baby. It's one of the reasons we're able to keep this free. We're not going to be charging for our podcast or our YouTube channel or anything like that. But it's also run by a high school coach for high school coaches or youth coaches or even college coaches. It's not run by a college. It's not Zoom. It's not all these Zoom calls. It's on court. It's demonstrations. It's videos. It's clinics. It's handouts. It's everything you need to become a better basketball coach in one-stop shop. So if it's not there, I will find it for you. All right, let's head off to the podcast.
We got a great episode today. Lee DeForest is a guy I kind of followed on the internet. And then I reached out to him. He's got some great books. He's got some great ideas. I know you're going to love today's podcast. I know sometimes people think they're long, but geez, I can't stop asking questions. I can't stop delving into all these coaches I'm having on. And that's why these podcasts, some of them are becoming an hour. I'm not going to cut it off. I'm not going to make it 23 minutes, because that's what you're supposed to do. We're going to get every question answered. So that's why you've got that fast forward button or that rewind button. I just think it's really important.
All right. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. I'm just even trying to think, Lee. I think we're going to be in the mid 90s by the time I get yours all queued up. The way I like doing these is I like turning it over to you first. I have everybody send their resumes. And okay. Yours is quite impressive. First of all, my wife went to St. Thomas. There's one in Minneapolis too. So there's lots of St. Thomas's, I'm guessing. But yeah. I'm going through this, and it's like, it would literally take me 10 minutes. It's a very impressive. Your basketball journey is, I'm going to ask you to not give me the full version.
Right. We don't have time. It's a 10-minute version. You have to learn how to do that when you're, I've been trying to interview for a job or two, and that's always what the AD always asks, where to start at. So I appreciate you having me on here, Coach.
Oh, this will be fun. I started this about 6 months ago. I was kind of doing it, and I started about 6 months ago. It's been so much fun. I have one coming up in 2 weeks where I did Don Showalter. It's like all these people that I kind of know. I know, but I don't know, because they're all world. Like, I followed your stuff on Twitter and seen it for so long that, I figured I'll just reach out to everybody, and probably about 80% of them stick, which is pretty impressive.
So I appreciate it. Don Showalter, a little more impressive than me. I appreciate you having me on here. He's an amazing coach. I've heard him speak at a lot of different clinics, but as for me and my background, I was at St. Thomas, as you saw, as a volunteer. This year, I'm going to be at Angelo State, Division II, out here in the Lone Star Conference in St. Angelo, Texas. But coached, high school 9 years, and coached AAU basketball. So I really have a heart for coaches that, I just heard you talking about what you need to do with your team over the summer. It's a 24/7 job, and I love talking to coaches. I love talking about, the journey. I mean, most recently, after we won the state title in 2011, and I can talk about this with, some younger coaches, I knew I was a little bit burnt out at that point. I don't know. At one point, I thought that wasn't possible, that you could never burn out. Like, I was like, you just have to dedicate, but I knew that's what it was. So I took a step back. And I was thinking about trying to get back into college. But I had English was my major, and sort of promised to parts of my family that I would eventually, when I was younger, I wanted to go to law school. And then I decided, hey, maybe I should, give that a shot. My whole goal was, let me go to law school, make a lot of money, then I'll go and be a basketball coach full time. And I won't. I love teaching, but you know,
it's about poverty.
It's a difficult job. Why teach English?
Yeah.
If you teach English and you're trying to, if you really do your job, you're grading, you know, 120 papers a night, and it's difficult. So,
well, I tell people, I've taught for 30 years. I tell people the one reason I will stop teaching is not the kids. Kids haven't really changed. It's not the parents. It's not that. It's the grading. It's like laundry. It never ends.
It's not just grading anymore. It's how did you get that grade? And you need to fix yourself.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. It's like I'm a math teacher, so I have figured out that I've graded like 750,000 different things in the 30 plus years. It's crazy. I mean, it's the best part about summer. I mean, it's busy, if not busier, during the summer with all the basketball and stuff. But I'm not grading.
What you want to do? It's what you love to do.
Yeah, I'm not grading. Yeah, I know.
I know you've never done this, looked at a practice plan in class or anything like that.
No, there's been a few
times. Scouting. Oh, I know, of course. I mean, and so I was like, I'm going to do this full time. So I thought I would step out, and I, you know, went and graduated, and that was cool. And now I'm getting an opportunity to try to get back in at the college level here with a great coaching staff, and they've been really successful. And so I'm really lucky where I'm at right now that I'm able to do that. So. Yeah, a lot of weird journey. So
tell me a little bit, like, you were in the Army for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in 6 years. I was in the reserve while I was coaching, you know.
Okay.
Might have led part of the burnout. Yeah. No, I was going to, you know, going to drill on the weekends once a month, and in the summers between balancing the summer camps, and, you know, you have your own camps at the high school, and then I had to go and do, you know, service. But I usually did that, you know, when we weren't doing team stuff, you know, right out of – try to do it early in July and that kind of thing. It's different in Kentucky as far as their dead period.
And I think the key to not burning out – this is for the bunch of the young coaches, because I've done it for 30 years. I've been a head coach for 20-plus. You got to do something. You got to have more than just basketball as your outlet. You will burn out if it's just basketball. You know, I
agree.
About four or five years ago, I started coaching volleyball. And then I, you know, I kind of started my business, and it's like, and I'm still doing everything else I was doing, you know, and we've been just as successful. I've been blessed, but it's a distraction, like this, like doing this and talking this. I love this. I would do this every night if I could. You know, the kids are in bed, whatever, but
right.
it's a distraction. This isn't work for me. This is a relaxing thing, because we're talking hoops. Yeah, that's what a bit of advice for all the young coaches listening. It's like, yes, you got to put the time in. You got to put the 90-hour weeks in. You got to do all that. But there's a point where if you want to do it if you're running the marathon, you got to know mile 20 is coming up. And if you
I was coaching the AAU teams and coaching all the middle school teams and then trying to do the varsity thing too. And I mean, I loved doing it. You know, I think if I was in a different position, maybe you have to find the right situation too. And we don't need to get into.
And I'm telling you, that's the key. Like I have the reason we've won is I've had great players, and I've had a great staff, and I've had great administration. My guys are down in, so we're located, for people listening, we're located in Madison, Wisconsin, which is the capital of Wisconsin. It's about 400,000 people. We go to Milwaukee, which is about 1 million with a suburban area. So my guys go down on Tuesdays and Thursdays and play in Milwaukee. I don't go. I send them with my assistants. I go watch my daughter play, my gym with my son, you know, because I don't need to do that anymore, because they fire me, I'll go fishing.
And,
you know.
Well, and at the same time, I've been around some head coaches with experience like you. I think you want to get away and let them hear another voice for a while too, because not to tune you out.
That's a little bit of my secret sauce too. It's like this, the summer's me bonding with them and kidding with them. And, you know, I went to one game on Saturday. I won't go back. I can't watch it. It's like, it stresses me. It stresses them. They're not being kids. They don't need, they just got to go play, you know, play, and we'll work on skill work and do all that kind of stuff. But
it makes sense.
Yeah. But these young guys, again, the ones listening, you don't have to do everything, but you got to find people in that inner circle you trust.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why when you think about it, I know when I was 21, 22, I was reading every book I could find. I remember I read all John Wooden stuff.
Look, yeah.
You read everything. And the one quote I remember at the time that didn't make a lot of sense, where he said the most important word in the English language is moderation or balance. And you're like, balance? What? You got, you know, and you don't really think about it. And I guess in one way, you know, he worked himself up from where he started. He lost a lot of games and then was really successful at UCLA.
Right.
You know, and I mean, you can look at the history where he started, because once he got it going, he got it going. But you do have to be, I think, unbalanced for a small amount of time.
You do. And that's what your 20s are for. That's the parent in me too. It's like, I'm going to tell my kids that go the 20s. You should figure, I mean, it's part of what I didn't do, but I love basketball so much. Everything was basketball in my 20s, which is fine. It worked out for me, but 20s should be when you go try stuff, go backpack through Europe, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm serious. This is more than about basketball. And that, you're right, that's a point in your life that if this is really something you want to do, and there's a lot of people listening that want to be college coaches, want to be head high school coaches, you know, want to do something, then yes, your 20s is the time to do it. Go work every camp you can work.
That's when you make your connections, and it's all about your network, and that's where you're going to find the job. And then you have to take some jobs that maybe you don't want. I mean, a lot of the jobs are open, and it's not because they're good jobs. I mean, the first job I had, they wanted one game the year before. We won three, which, you know, I look at as a 300% improvement.
Right.
You know, and you have to do that. You know, you're 23 years old. You're not going to get the state. You know, you have to prove yourself. And a lot of it is figuring out how to win with less talent, keeping the games competitive. And then you take the next challenge of having some more talent. You can't play the same way. You have, you know, because it's boring for those. You know, if you look for – if you're looking for a challenge or problems that change on a day-to-day basis, I think basketball coaching is great.
Right. I mean, when I got my job, I was the only applicant. They had had 6 winning seasons in 45 years. I mean, now we're probably one of the winningest programs in the state of Wisconsin. It didn't have – first of all, I did get an NBA kid to come through, so that helps. Don't get me wrong. But it was a slow – it wasn't overnight. It was slow. Right. You know, we wanted to just win games. And then, you know, once the train gets out of the station, things can happen.
You have to have an administration that will relax with you, and you have to have good parents along the way.
And there's all those things.
I mean, a lot of that goes with what you've developed. I mean, I know that nothing happens by accident.
Right. So tell me a little bit, like, I cannot believe all – so first of all, tell me how you got into the Princeton thing.
Sure.
I'm a Dartmouth grad, so I'll be okay with you talking about Princeton, but go ahead.
Well, I didn't go to Princeton, but I played for a coach that, you know how it goes, once you learn a style, you kind of hand it down, and I played for a coach that did that in college, and I learned a lot about it, but not necessarily how to coach it, you know, because just because you know the things, you don't really know the thinking behind it when you're a player. And then I got with him.
And that's a big thing for the people listening too. Being a player, and I was a good player. I played college basketball, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Being a player and being a coach are totally different things. So those of you that are in your 20s and early, and I was a great player, you were. But the great players, I never thought when I was playing. I just played. Right. I did what the coach told me to do.
You didn't think what the best shot every time down, what the – your teammates, what position they'll play best in, what plays you can run that in certain situations. There's just a whole different – and you don't even want to get into teaching. That's like a whole other – how you teach somebody, because knowing what they need to push them to the next level but not overwhelm them and meeting them where they're at, that's like a lifetime skill that some people have. And so, I mean, you just have to keep practicing it. That is such a different thing.
Oh, it's crazy. I'm over 50. I've taught for 30 plus, almost 30 years. Hey, everybody. Hope you're enjoying the podcast. I'd like to give a big shout out to teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. They allow us to keep these podcasts moving and chugging and allow us to pay the bills. So it's one way that you can give back. If you love these podcasts, come over and join for a couple of months. The 14-day free trial, kick the tires around. And we've got lots of great new things going up on a daily basis. We would love if you subscribe and like wherever you do that, Apple, Spotify. And then go over and check out our other two podcasts, High School Hoops and Teacher Sidegate. I think you'll love them. All right, let's head back to the podcast. And I feel like I'm just getting the gist of teaching. like in my classroom. I feel like I'm just turning the corner. Like,
yeah,
it's starting to work, you know, 30 years. So, yeah. Teaching a pivot.
Well, we do what we learn, right? You mimic the master, they say. I mean, you, whatever they do, you mimic that. And then you use the same lingo, use the same language.
Yeah.
But the reasoning behind it and why, you don't really understand it. You're just doing it because of comfort, because you know that's what they yelled at you to do, and you're going to yell at them to do it. And it's sort of an ego thing, like, I know I'm right. That's what they told me to do. Right. And once you get, I think, and you talk to young coaches, I think once you get through a point of self-confidence where you're like, I'm okay, I can do this job, you really start to learn more and be more acceptive of the fact that you don't know anything. I mean, I don't know anything. I've been, like, you know, we've been doing it forever. And once you reach that point where you're like, I'm not really sure about everything, and I'm still open to learning. I mean, that's when you see the greatest coaches in the world show up with, you know, notebooks at clinics to watch high school clinics. And that's something that you always have to do.
Right. And I think it's two things for the people listening. I think you got to feel good in your own skin. Like, I'm okay. You know, and part of that is I've done everything I can do, whatever. I feel fine in it. I'm just going to go coach what I got to do. But you have to, you know, things change. I've had teams that have scored 90 points a game. Last year, we averaged like 37. Part of it is, don't do the newest, flashiest thing necessarily. Find something that fits you well or fits your kids well.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I think I see this a lot, and you probably do too. And I always try to tell I'm not a sage. I'm not, you know, handing out advice. But anytime I talk to coaches that are interested in learning, that want to know or email me, I think don't look for the newest thing. Don't look for the, you know, the trendy thing. Look for the right thing. And that is a whole different skill. What's the right thing to do? And you'll know. And I think it always has to do with the players. Do the right thing with your, that fits your players. You have to adapt. I don't agree with coaches that say, hey, just be yourself. And, you know, and I mean, at some point, yes, but you still need to stretch a little. Like, if you're not vocal and you're not a good leader and you don't like to work hard, you've got to change if you want to stay in this business. You have to be able to talk to kids. You have to be able to teach.
You have to talk to them differently than you did 30 years ago, too.
You're changing all the time, right?
The things I did 30 years ago, I would be like, I'd be fishing if I did them right now. I mean, the things have just
always.
Yeah, it's exactly. Averaging. Let's get back to the Princeton thing.
Sure. So, sorry about that. I played in it. I love the style of the system. I probably wouldn't do it. I put the whole system in. I put the matchup zone. We ran every underneath, every side, every single element that they ran into it. We did the philosophy. This was before the dribble drive got really, we want a three-point shot or we want a drive, you know. And that's sort of what Kirill did before the three-point line. He was taking your post out and shooting an outside shot, or he was backdoor cut in, posting up. And I love that style. I think it's really flexible. I think if you watch the NBA – if you watch the horn sets, if you watch some of the corner offense that Adelman ran when he was at Minnesota, there's a lot of variations. The Kings used to run it with Weber and Divock. So it's been around for a long time.
And, Bo Ryan's a big swing guy, but a lot of his stuff is the guys are outside. There's a lot. I mean, he got out of that swing. I used to run flex swing, but then, you know, he's gotten out of that. He got out of that before he retired those big guys being able to step out, being able to cut to the basket.
Yeah, that was his famous that swing offense with the UCLA cut. And then the flip. That was cool. I love that. We ran that at one of the colleges I was at as a sort of a secondary type. It's a good continuity. I think in today's game, it's hard to run things like flex, things like just constant continuities, just the way that the kids want to play. Everybody, there's such a premium on dribbling now in – half the time when they set what used to be a good screen, it's illegal now.
Right.
So, you know,
give the coaches that are listening kind of tell them, because there's people listening to this that won't even
have
know
no what idea.
Offense is. No idea.
Okay. Well, to start with, the way that you run the Princeton, it's based off emotion. It's based on a read and react type of system. What happens is wherever the ball is located kind of serves as a trigger to tell you what action to run. Right. So in a way, it's like six different interchangeable sets. They flow into one another and back. So you can go from chin into five out, back into chin, for example.
Right.
If you don't know what that is, you can email me and I'll shoot it to you. That you can run these different sets and they flow into one another. And what it focuses on is big time spacing. A lot of it is four out. But you have to have a center that has some skills. There's different adjustments you can make if you don't want your center handling.
So how is this different than read and react? Read and react can
sure.
Read and react.
Well, read and react. I like the read and react, but the problem is you wait. The defense sort of dictates what you can do. Like right. If they play here, you do this. Is the read here? I can dictate. For example, we can run a set, and I can dictate who I want to catch the ball where and isolate. So if you're switching, I can do something. No matter what you try to do, even if I have a great player, I can isolate, I can post you up, I can get threes, I can run sets. If you sag, here's the general philosophy is if you sag, we screen. If you pressure, we back cut. Right. And so you mix in back cuts, you mix in screens. It just really keeps the defense basically chasing you. And once you get the defense on the run, you want to keep them on the run. That's the right. That's philosophy.
Yeah, and read and react does that a little bit in the sense that mm-hmm. There's so many layers of the read and react. It's just
I love the high post. Listen, I don't care what level I was coaching. I saw the Cavs do it last year, score four straight times. It's a high post rub. It's you hit the big at the elbow. You go act like you're screening hard for the next man away from you, and then they backdoor cut, and the guy that set the screen pops out. And it's basically an isolation. There's a lot of different things you can do that people think. I think people think the Princeton is a slowdown game, but they ran an NBA.
Right, and it's not.
You pick out – once you know the whole system, it's like anything. Once you have the encyclopedia, you look at your players, you look at their strengths, and you say, okay, we're going to run this set, and this set, because it takes advantage. Maybe you have a guard that can post. You can run it. Maybe you have a wing that's not a great shooter. You put him as a screener. You know, there's a lot of different things – or you have a great shooter and use them as a screener. It just depends on what you want to do philosophy wise, but you're able to, the reason I like it different than the read and react is because I can adapt it. I feel like much more to my personnel and I never have to do anything different. If you press me, if you play zone, if you do all the principles are still effective. In other words, we're always trying to get threes first. We always try to get drives. We always try to post. And that's sort of the way you play. And
The game's pretty simple. That's why
it really is. I mean, the actions, the weak side, like the weak side UCLA screen off the ball reversal is unique to the Princeton. It's that chin cut.
Yep.
It's unique. The Princeton's the only one that does that. And there's a lot of ball screen actions you can run out of it. I mean, we had quick one, quick two. I mean, we did a lot of different things because we wanted to keep the defense, you know, off balance. It's not. It doesn't have to be a set offense. Like, you know, like a lot of teams come down and you call a set, then you execute. And if the other coach is any good, he's scouted you and he's like, hey, they're doing. But this offense, what I liked about it is I could come down and yell out whatever, chin, get in chin. And we'd be in it. I'd watch what the defense is doing. And then I could yell out to our guys, hey, ice Justin. And so boom, boom, boom. And we would get something off. You know, I like that ability to have a set, but adaptable within a possession. Instead of calling time out and saying, hey, we need to do this, and then the other coach goes zone, and you're like, okay, you're able to, it's whoever gets to go last, you know.
Right. It's 18 different tests. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the thing that I like about the Princeton, the way that I taught it and the way that our players were able to execute it. And it's been really special for me when I hear from coaches that have said they tried it the way we, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it. But we did it where all the perimeters are interchangeable and the posts have a role. So it's basically learn only two positions.
Right.
And it makes it easier, I think.
And ball screens have become such a big part. I mean, at least they have around our area. Ball screens
for sure.
Are huge. And you know,
everything.
Yeah.
I'm not sure kids – how to create. And there's plenty of – like this offense, I mean, there's more ball screens set in the middle of the floor. There's not – there's side pick and roll action. Off of cuts, there's not a lot of slot screens or things like that that the NBA, you know, the players like to do there. But the ball screen stuff is good. I don't know what you call the action with the side pick and roll where the guy fills behind where you're driving it middle. They call that shake. Yeah. I don't know what you call that. That's against manners.
We don't set a lot of ball screens because,
a lot of athletic kids. They jump it really hard, and kids can't pass. I mean, I'm old. I sound old. The slip in the pass is not there like it used to be.
It's not.
No.
I agree with you. And what do you do? Players like the ball screen. That's why I was just talking about it. I think we watch the NBA and the effectiveness of that, but then we think that that'll trickle down. And in high school, it's to me, it's way too easy just to switch and be
– switch or jump it. If you jump it, there's three guards in the state of Wisconsin. If I jump it hard, they're going to be able to get out of it or make a pass.
So you spend all your time working on breakdown drills for the side pick and roll, hit the roll guy, rescreen, and you get jumped. It's hard to simulate that. And the coach, I know a lot of coaches that once you jump it two or three times, they don't want to do it.
Right. You know? And the issue is too, is like we're dealing with high school kids. The kid might be 5'9".
Right. He's getting jumped. You can go under everything almost anyway. Not a lot of kids shooting off a dribble for three. No. I mean, I like the idea. I mean, but I don't think it's as effective because of the skill level.
I think the higher up, the more it is. So you've done a couple of videos. You got a new book coming out. What's the book?
Yeah.
Talk about the book a little bit.
You know, it's funny. I wrote one. It's called Youth Basketball, the Drills for Ball Toughness. I wrote a book. Basically, we were talking about passing. I think it's the most underdeveloped fundamental. I know everybody has a cone and a basketball, and they do all these great dribbling and they do all these great dribbling drills. passing, you know, is
that's a whole different podcast. Trust me, dribbling. It's like let's do our 17 and one moves, and you know how many times you're going to do them in a game?
None. You're going to travel
once
have a cone guarding you, then you're going to be a really good player.
Yes,
but yeah, I remember I watched Rex Walters. You probably don't know who that is. Some of the listeners may not know. He played at Kansas half a year in the NBA. Great two-ball dribble guy. Did everything with the two-ball dribbles. Tim Hardaway couldn't do a two-ball dribble drill. Right. And I think we know who he'd rather have playing point for us. It has to do more with contact, I think.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. Make sure you subscribe, like. We love those. And send me an email, steve@teachhoops.com. Tell me what you want to hear in the future. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Have a great day.
Sports Social Podcast Network.